Hello, this is Perry, and you're listening to Chemist Corner for Wednesday, March 25th, 2015.
Hello and welcome to Chemist Corner, the only cosmetic formulating show done by real cosmetic chemists. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, and if I had it my way, cosmetic chemists would be as well known as famous chefs. I mean, after all, creating cosmetics is very much the same as creating gourmet dishes, right? But alas, we cosmetic chemists rarely get much credit for creating the beauty products people use every day. That's okay, it is still a really cool job. Anyway, we've got a big show for you today, and we're going to do something a little different. Today on the show, we've got Valerie Patton. She's a cosmetic formulator and a blog contributor to Chemist Corner. Welcome to the show, Valerie.
Thank you for having me, Perry. It's great to be on this episode.
Yes, indeed. It's great to have you today. I thought we'd try something a little different by having you join me for the entire show. Usually I just do an interview, and then it's just me talking the other times. So we'll start out with an interview so people know how you got into the cosmetic industry and to learn a bit about your background. Then we can talk about a couple of the science-related topics that we've talked about. Sound good?
Sounds great. Let's get started.
All right. Well, Valerie, I think I first met you virtually via Twitter. You tweet as the LA Hobo, and of course I encourage everyone to follow her on Twitter. She does an excellent job of tweeting about cosmetic science, among other topics. But before we go any further, why don't you start off with how you got involved in science and then how you made your way into the cosmetic industry?
Well, believe it or not, I got my start in science from about the age of five. My parents got me a microscope as a birthday present, and I remember looking at slices of onion and, you know, taking some of my mom's blood and looking at it on slides, and that really first started my interest in, you know, what are we made of, what are plants made of, all that kind of stuff. And then at the age of nine, I got an environmental chemistry kit, and I was able to, take air samples, water samples, and kind of play around with those a little bit. So I've always loved science from a young age, and that's what I ended up studying in college. I was a biochemistry major and continued on to grad school in chemistry, and I loved it so much, I thought, why not use my degree and get a job?
Well, that's very cool. It's very encouraging to hear that your parents were very encouraging of your scientific endeavors, even when you were really young.
Yeah, it's funny. They're not scientists. My mom's in accounting, and my father is retired military. So, you know, it's not like they were scientists and, you know, kind of pushed this on me. They just saw that from a young age. I was very curious and always asking why and how and trying to understand how the world works. So looking back, I'm very, you know, appreciative of, you know, the direction they did give me.
Yeah, I think the thing that got me in science was that I just really liked animals, and just so it just sort of naturally led me towards biology. But I too got a degree in biochemistry, but it was mostly because I saw that there were more jobs in chemistry than in biology.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And I feel like with biochemistry, you get the best of both worlds. You have a little biology, a little chemistry, some physics, and it's just enough kind of to make you a jack of all trades. So that's why I specifically chose biochemistry.
So how is it? Okay, so you got through college with a degree in biochemistry, and so how do you end up in the cosmetic industry specifically?
I first got into the personal care industry when I moved to Los Angeles from the Midwest. This is a real hub and hot spot for cosmetics. And starting in high school, I had taken an interest in creating my own products to use. And when I arrived in LA and needed a job, I thought, hey, why not do this for a living? So I was fortunate to land a job at a startup men's skincare line. And from there was trained and then moved to hair care, which is what I really enjoy.
Well, it's very cool. So what were kind of the first thing you were doing when you were in your first job? What kind of kind of tasks
did
you
do? I was the liaison between the manufacturing facilities that the skincare line used and the rest of the company. So I was able to utilize not only my passion for cosmetic science, but my biochemistry knowledge, chemistry knowledge, to kind of translate, well, why don't we adjust the pH here? I would check products as they came off the production line to ensure that they were in specification. And from there, I was trained in ingredients, how they went together, inky names, all that sort of stuff. So I was able to get kind of a from the ground up view from the production end into cosmetic science. And then I really honed in on my formulating skills probably about 2 years into the job.
Right, because when you first got into it, you don't really learn a lot about formulating in college, right?
No, you don't learn a lot about formulating in college. It's one of those things I feel that it's a skill sort of learned on the job. So by starting from the ground up, I think that you're able to gather all the bits of pieces and see all the angles. And then when you start to learn formulating, you kind of have an idea of what's going on, where are things coming from. You're familiar with the terminology. You're familiar with what specifications you should be looking for, how to measure them, what's good, what's bad, that sort of thing. So if I had just jumped into formulating, I think I would have been a lot more lost than easing into formulating, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. And it's a way a lot of people who get into the industry start. You know, I started as a cost savings chemist, which essentially meant I had to reduce the amount of ingredients in our formulas. But I didn't get started like formulating my own products right away. Well, over the years, what type of have been some of your favorite jobs or projects that you've worked on?
I'd have to say that what I'm doing right now is my most favorite part. While I really enjoyed doing skincare and makeup because I'm more of a user of those, I enjoy hair care because the results are so instantaneous. And when people have a great hair day, they feel really good about themselves. So to know that I'm a part of that is awesome. Something I'm doing right now is focusing on hair color. I have a mentor and I'm getting really involved with the oxidative chemistry and reactions behind permanent hair color. And I really enjoy that because you can see how things work and it's, you know, relatively instantaneous and it's just cool. It's cool to see, you know, color come to light.
You know, and it's an area that there aren't really a lot of experts even among the cosmetic industry because I know there aren't a lot of people who worked with specifically with hair colors.
No, I don't want to say they're a dying breed, but, you know, a lot of the people I do know in the industry they've been in the industry for a while. They're older and, you know, it is kind of a unique field. So not too many people are just jumping right into it. And it's something you sort of fall into. It's something I fell into. And to be able to have someone to work with, I think it's very difficult to learn on your own. You definitely need some sort of apprenticeship or training to do it. I definitely couldn't have learned what I know now, you know, by myself.
Right. Do you think that as being a formulator, it has made you a better evaluator of the different types of cosmetic products that you were using before you knew about formulating?
I think that it has definitely made me understand how products are put together and to look at the ingredients and understand why they're there. I don't believe that cosmetic chemists include things like fillers or unnecessary items. They would just add to the cost. And I believe that everything generally has a function or should have a function in a product. In terms of a sensory point of view, I feel like my ability to assess the finished good has been improved by a testing salon that we have outside of our lab where we actually have stylists using the products we create. And they've actually helped me assess things for combability or slip and appreciate how products work, I guess, a little better. I'm not very good at doing my own hair, so I'm really appreciative that they've helped me, I guess, see how products work.
Well, I used to love to go into our test salon and get all the people going in there and their half-head tests, and it was lots of fun.
Oh, yeah, and it's nice when sometimes they test on me, and, you know, I'll be a volunteer for my own products you know, kind of like don't trust a chef who won't eat their own food. You know, I generally like to try everything I make, except for the hair color. I can't always try that. But it's really nice to be able to have, you know, them style my hair. And then when I leave work, everyone's like, wow, your hair looks really good. And I'll just flip it over my shoulders and be like, thanks, I know. But I don't really go to work looking like that. So it's my little secret, I guess, to the world.
It is one of the advantages of being a hair care formulator.
Mm-hmm.
All right, just to wrap up this portion of the show, do you have any kind of advice that you might have for someone who's, you know, studying chemistry or science right now, or they're interested in getting into the cosmetic industry?
I think that people interested in getting into the cosmetics industry should take advantage of the online resources that are offered to them. Chemist Corner is a great reference tool. I know that you have some online courses they can take. But following cosmetic chemists on Twitter, keeping up with industry news, and then first and foremost, meeting people. A lot of the industry is who you know, and it's a small community, and people work at different companies, and they move on, but they're still around. So I think by maybe attending an SCC meeting or meeting people online and introducing yourself and kind of having the ability to be under someone's wing, you know, can help you land a job in the industry, because you don't always get trained in school on how to formulate or how to do the things that we do as cosmetic formulators. So by knowing someone, I think you have a greater chance to be involved.
Yeah, networking is also something they don't really teach you much when you're going through college, and it's a really important skill, especially when you get into any industry, and specifically the cosmetic industry.
Yeah, you'll never know who you run into or who you need assistance from, and, you know, whether it's another formulator or a purveyor of raw materials, you never know who you need to know, I guess.
Exactly. Well, thanks, Valerie. It's always interesting to hear the different ways that people end up in the cosmetic industry and the kinds of things that they do. You know, it's pretty rare that anyone, you know, has the idea to really become a cosmetic chemist before they get into college. It's really something that kind of occurs to people afterwards.
I never even thought about who made my personal care products. I just used shampoo and put on lipstick and never really thought, hey, did science go into this? I honestly don't think it's something people think about.
Yeah, an excellent point. You know, actually, I hope through this show and the blog and even with Twitter, you know, I hope that really more people start to look at the cosmetic industry as a place to get a good science job. It's actually fun science. You create products that actually are products that people use and you make. I think of, like, people who are working in cancer research where they can work for years in the lab and never produce anything. That's got to be a little depressing.
I would definitely be frustrated by that, but to know that in a couple hours you could, you know, whip up a face lotion or a body wash or a hair conditioner and be able to take it home that night and use it, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things. All right, since I have you on the show and you wrote the article, I thought it would be fun in our formulating tip segment to talk about the raw materials and the questions you should ask vendors when you're ordering them. So first, why don't you go explain the process by which a cosmetic chemist gets introduced to a raw material? How do we find out about them?
Well, there's quite a few ways that we can learn about raw materials. I know that I subscribe to a lot of industry newsletters, and many times in the newsletters, a raw material manufacturer will make an announcement about a new material they have, or even the vendors that sell these materials will email or call me and say, hey, we have this new product for hair care. We want to keep you in mind. Can we come present it to you so we can set up a meeting to present it? And then Happy Magazine, Cosmetics and Toiletries, you know, they all have advertisements or articles featuring raw materials. Or even sometimes you can hear about studies where a certain ingredient has been attributed to prevention of hair loss or less wrinkles, and you'll see that kind of trickle into the cosmetics industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, going to trade shows, boy, you could learn a lot at a trade show.
Oh, yeah, that is the holy grail of ways to learn about new materials. It's definitely, you could spend a couple of days digesting everything and taking in all that the vendors have to offer. There seems to be an endless amount of ingredients available.
Indeed. And speaking of vendors, one of the key ways that we learn about raw materials is that a vendor will set up an appointment with you and introduce the new raw material. So what are some of the things that you might talk to a vendor about when they're presenting a new raw material to you?
Well, first and foremost, I like to find out what the ingredient is. Is it a surfactant, an emulsifier, a preservative? That way, during the presentation, I can keep in mind what its potential uses are. So as they go through the material and present their studies on it or how they think it should be used in a formulation, I ask myself, is this something I can use? So maybe I'm working on a shampoo or a hairstyling product or a hair color. Those are all certain environments that the ingredients need to be specially chosen for. So I ask the supplier questions like, what is the optimal pH range for this material? What the use level is? I look at what percentage their studies were done at. Are there any incompatibilities that this material might have? And then right away, you can either eliminate it from your arsenal, like, would I really use this? Or decide, hey, this might work for the project that I have.
Right. One of the things that I think a lot of cosmetic chemists don't realize is that the vendors who come in, they're encouraged to get you to sample as many ingredients as you can sample, because you know, the way that their metrics in their job works is that they get credit for visiting people, but they get a lot more credit when they can get somebody to get a sample. What are the kinds of things when you're getting a sample are that you should keep track of?
Well, I keep track of when I get the sample, and I promise myself that in X amount of time, I'm going to make a sample formulation with it. And with that, I make sure I get the appropriate documentation, like a technical data sheet and an MSDS, so I know what kind of hazards or disposal go along with using the material. And then I ask for a sample formulation. And what I do is I make a prototype, the maximum recommended usage, or sometimes even a little more, to see what attributes this ingredient really gives to the formula. And sometimes I'll make a prototype without it so I can do a side-by-side comparison, and I see if it's really doing what they're saying it does, or can I say, meh, you know, I'm not too impressed. And then I try to give feedback to the vendor, whether it worked out or whether there is improvements that they can do on their end so that I could consider using it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, this is where it's really handy to have some systematic way of keeping notes when you meet a vendor with a new raw material. It's like, as you say, you know, what's the application and what's the use level and the solubility in certain formulas? Because when you get that sample, you know, if you're anything like me, you'll forget why you asked for the sample.
Sometimes I do, and I've done that before, and then I feel really bad, and I'm like, oh, why did I want this again? But I've gotten to keep spreadsheets where I keep track of that, and then I can also keep track if I gave the vendor feedback on it, and that's really helped me a lot so that I make sure I'm not letting it sit for 2 years, and then I really forget why I even ordered it.
Right. I think my favorite thing to do, though, is to always just ask the vendor to supply me like a finished product with the ingredient in there and then another one with the same product with the ingredient out of there, so I could just compare the finished formula.
Yeah, that's even better than you having to make the batches. The work's already been done for you, and you can immediately qualify it or disqualify it.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't like is when people don't get back to the vendors, because like you said, they get credit, or you know, from their upper management, you know, they have to report to them what they sampled to you, and then they're kind of hanging on the line like, well, do you want it or not? And if you never let them know, I don't know. I always like to be kind to the vendors.
Yeah, it's an excellent point, and who knows when you might be a vendor sometime, or, you know, because
exactly. The industry is small. You never know.
That is definitely the way it goes.
Or you never know when you need a favor from the vendor.
That is an excellent point. All right, that is our formulating tip. And now we've got one more segment, which I like to call Cosmetic Science News. Have you seen all these beauty bloggers who have started their own lines?
I have.
Well, the most famous beauty blogger turned cosmetic brand is probably Michelle Phan, right? And she made a splash last year with a color line, which she did with L'Oreal, right?
Yeah, was it L'Oreal? It might have been.
Yeah, I think she's L'Oreal. She started as a beauty vlogger, I guess. She has a little YouTube channel.
And now she has tens of millions of followers.
Go figure. How did that happen? I think she started blogging after me. Well, I think the key is the video is really sort of a more interactive thing than even audio or text. But, you know, she is not alone. There are other beauty bloggers who have come out with their own line. Like, there's Emily Weiss. She has a line of moisturizers and lip balms. Kara Brook has a line of makeup. There's this Elizabeth Den, who has a line of organic beauty products. Of course, right? And then there's this surprising entry that I saw. This guy, Eric Bandholtz, he has a brand called Beard Brand. And if you look at his picture, he's got this really bright red beard. And so
it's an impressive beard, I'll say that.
Exactly. So he launched his beauty brand with his beard, I guess, right? I will be curious to see how these brands do. I mean, if you can get a following on the internet, you should be able to get enough consumers to at least buy your products a little bit, right?
Yeah, well, they have the hardest part down, marketing and a fan base.
Yeah, and that is the interesting part about being a cosmetic chemist. You know, I'm often asked, and, you know, I'm also a blogger, too, so I get this even more. I'm often asked why I don't have, why I haven't started my own line. But, you know, there's a number of reasons why a cosmetic chemist wouldn't want to launch their own line, and I think you just sort of alluded to one of them. It's the truth about beauty products is that it's really... the success or failure kind of hinges on the marketing, right?
I absolutely believe that. I have product ideas all the time where I say, wow, wouldn't that be cool if such and such, but the reality is I'm a scientist. I will admit I don't know the first thing about marketing. For me to create an amazing formula is one thing. And I typically like everything I make, so that's kind of another bias that I have. But is that something that people really want to buy, and is there a place in the market for it? Those are things that I'm not an expert at. And in reality, marketing is what sells a brand, not how great the formula is. I think it helps, but I think the most part is finding your audience and being able to make them compelled to try your product.
Yeah. Another thing about scientists, you know, we tend to like to be in the lab, and being in the lab is not conducive for selling a lot of beauty products, right?
Oh, I'm sure it's very time consuming. I mean, that's why companies have departments dedicated to marketing and sales. And of course, you have research and development departments. And if we're in the lab all day creating these great products, when would we have time to sell them?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that brings me to another point. Like, when we're in the lab, you know, we like making the formulas. But making a formula and being creative and coming up with a formula, that's a lot different than, you know, creating a brand and selling the story to people.
That is very true. And like I mentioned a moment ago, I like everything I make for the most part. I mean, a couple times, you know, I see improvement, but... You know, I think if I'm blind to my own product, is that something other people even want? I could think it's the greatest thing, but it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what someone else thinks.
That is the hardest. That is one of the hardest parts. It's like I remember I had this project where I was working on a shampoo, and I made just the most wonderful shampoo that I could make. But then I did a blinded test where I made it smell and look the same as a really, really cheap formula, which is our VO5 formula. And I gave it to people and asked them if they could tell a difference. Now, I could personally tell a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
But of the 15 people that I gave samples to, only one person was able to tell any difference. you know, it's still a wonderful product, and it's actually was at one point the formula for TRESemmé shampoo.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's very cool. Just another thing that probably makes formulating chemists not the best people to launch their own lines, while we know how to make the products, that doesn't necessarily mean that we have enough starting money to make the products, you know?
Starting a cosmetics brand can be very expensive. It's highly product dependent, but there's an article that I wrote a while back about all the costs involved with starting your own brand, and it requires a lot of capital. And I think a misconception about scientists is that we make a ton of money. And so maybe some do, but, you know, for the most part, chemists aren't exactly rolling in the dough. So I think that's definitely a hindering factor.
Yeah, definitely. It's always a little bit amusing to me. I'll get contacted through the blogs, and people say they want to start their own line, but they don't have any money to start their own line. And really, the reality is you probably need about $15,000 or so to get started with your own brand. And not everyone has that.
And that's bare minimum, too. I think something a lot of people should consider is private labeling, where the products are already done. Mm-hmm. You just need to market them in your own way. I think that's a viable option for people, but I don't think people see it as being personable or unique from a product standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, those are just a few of the reasons why the people who actually know how to make the products don't necessarily start their own lines. All right, well, thanks so much for joining us today, Valerie. I just have a few announcements. I will be giving a product development course in New York at the SCC headquarters. It's always fun to go down to Manhattan there. But you can go to the scconline.org for more information there. Also, we've got lots of discussions going on at the Cosmetic Science Forum. So be sure to go there and join at Cosmetic Science Talk. And, of course, follow us on Twitter. I'm Chemist Corner, or The Joggler, which is my other one. And what's your handle on Twitter, Valerie?
I am the LA Hobo.
Yeah, how did you end up with the LA Hobo?
When I went to Los Angeles, I mentioned I was looking for a job, and I didn't have really, you know, a steady source of income when I first came here. And I thought, you know what? I will just try to survive as thriftily as possible for the time being, and so I was just sort of the LA hobo.
Well, it's very bold, and you went to California, which has probably much better weather than here in the Midwest.
Oh yeah, that's actually the reason I moved here. It's you know, when it's snowing in Chicago and it's sunny here, where would you want to be?
Well, I just got back from Florida, so I got to get out of Chicago for a few weeks, but yes, the warmth is better, certainly in January and February.
Speaking of warmth, the California chapter of the Society of Cosmetic Chemists is having a meeting this March 24th if any of the listeners are in the area.
Well, that's excellent. All right, well, thanks, Valerie. Do you have any parting words for us?
Join the discussions at Chemist Corner. You can learn a lot and get your foot in the door.
All right, well, thanks for listening. I'm Perry Romanowski, and now... go make a difference.